Thank you so much for tuning in to listener-supported WDRT 91.9. You're listening to The Skeptical Naturopath with Paul Rattay and Christina DeRocher. Good morning, Paul.
Hi, Christina. How are you?
Great. Didn't have any sugar this morning.
You knew. You were forewarned.
I did have a little bit yesterday. I had some chocolate chips. I was feeling tired.
The question is how much?
Oh, it was probably less than 10. I put a tiny little pile on my hand. Sometimes I do that at night if I have to do the dishes before bed. I need a little kick.
A little kick, because that's what sugar does, yes?
Yes.
So you want to talk about sugar?
I'm going to be blushing the whole time remembering the 80s when I would go to the Brock's Pick a Pound at my local grocery store with all of my weekly allowance and then come home and eat them.
You remember the Jelly Bellies? So it was Jelly Bellies?
I wasn't.
Is that Ronald Reagan that had the Jelly Bellies?
I don't know.
Because you could get the different, you could get all the different flavors, right? But it was the same delivery method, yes? Now the new one is the Bean Boozled. Do you know the Bean Boozled?
No. Oh, the newest Jelly Bean.
The Jelly Bean.
And
they have the
games.
Well, you're trying to say, are you getting a good flavor or a bad flavor? Because they have, like, cut grass.
I know, right?
And, like, vomit or something like that. And it's like, wow.
It's
now
off
we get
the charts.
Maybe that's the way to do it, right? So instead of sugar, you think you're getting candy and it tastes like cut grass.
Right. Reminds me of when I used to bite my fingernails and they would put you have a special nail polish that tastes terrible so you don't bite your nails. Same idea.
Did you overcome that?
Oh, yeah. I would just, it tastes bad the first couple of bites and then you're fine. You've just basically eaten it off your nails. I'm sorry, listeners. We should really start over here.
Maybe that builds your palate, though, yes? Was it sour? Was it bitter?
It was very bitter.
Oh, yeah. So you build your bitter palate by chewing your fingernails.
That's the only reason I eat dandelion greens now.
Wow. See, again, it's all about building that palate, and perhaps we're building it in the wrong direction now. Yes, that's what sugar does.
Well, the availability of sugar alone and the fact that it's ubiquitous, right? You go to a birthday party, you go to a parade, you go to a wedding, you go to a retirement party. I mean, it's any kind of celebration, any kind of monumental marking of anything. Every holiday, right? Every holiday has its sugar.
But now we celebrate every meal.
Yes.
Celebration was once a month, like you get one celebration, but now we can celebrate like six times a month, or now we can celebrate, I don't know, 24 times a month. Oh, I had a hard day. I'm going to,
have some ice cream.
Yeah, I'm going to have some ice cream because I deserve it. Yes.
Right.
And that's the culture we live in, right? It's available to us. Because I always think back like Little House of the Prairie, I think I've talked about this, or like a Charles Dickens novel, right? When they talk about like they actually have a pie or they have something that they made, like this is a huge deal.
Oh, yeah.
The huge fruit deal.
The fruit that they picked and the dough that they made or what was in season, what was available and how much of it did they acquire? I mean, they're not making 16 pies and distributing them in the neighborhood, right?
And sugar is it's a good that's, bought and sold, right? That sugar does not originate from my backyard.
Right. Yeah, it was a big deal for them to save up too to buy sugar. That was not a ready commodity in everybody's pantry.
So the question is our sweet tooth like stronger than it was before? Like how long have humans liked sugar or loved sugar? Is this a brand new thing?
I can't imagine, no.
So what I know, and this is me sort of knowing and putting it together, is the Crusades. So the Crusaders came, and when they're in the Middle East, they tried the extract of sugar, and I can't remember what it was. There's some name for that. And they brought that back with them because they had the taste of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I want this, yes?
Yeah.
And so humans, we like sugar.
Mm-hmm.
We're like driven for sugar. And it kind of makes sense too in the wild if you're going to taste something. Like, how do we know that that's poisonous or how do we know that that's safe?
Bitter versus sweet.
Bitter versus sweet. So sugar is some inherently, something we've developed to be able to tell us, don't eat it.
Mm-hmm.
It's poisonous. Whereas bitter, now we have to acclimate to that. And then it's still like, wow, I got that bitter stuff on my nail, and maybe that's poisonous, right?
Right.
But that's just the idea that you may see a berry, but you taste it, and you say, no good, spit it out. So we're already, like, cultivated to want sugar, right, or to want sweet. And again, it's nothing new to us. We eat sugar. We like sugar. Humans always like sugar. But why has the consumption gone up so dramatically? Actually, it's been stable for about 10 years now. That hasn't gone. I mean, you see the graphs and you'd be like, oh, eventually our diet's going to be 100% sugar. Yeah, that's not true. That trajectory is not going to continue. So it's kind of leveled off to the point that it's at, you know, depending on who you look at or what they're saying, you know, perhaps 100 to 170 pounds of added sugar to our diet. The difference there is, do we include fruit juice? Do we include other things, right? So is it just, quote unquote, refined sugar, or do we include, you know, honey and maple syrup and those kinds of things? So then numbers somewhere, let's say it's 120 pounds a year, right? 120 pounds that we add. I mean, if we go back to Civil War times, it was like 25 pounds, not even that, 15 pounds, something like that in the 1860s. Did we not like sugar in the 1860s?
I would say that's untrue.
No. Did we not like sugar in the 1400s?
Right.
No, we like sugar. So what's the deal? Why do we eat so much sugar?
Availability.
Availability. What goes with availability? Some economics. What's the economics of availability? So availability, of course, people like sugar. And what's going to be the motivating factor to say, hey, we need to give them sugar. We got to get sugar to England. We got to put sugar in the tea. And the companies knew that they put sugar in the tea, that, you know, you get tea on a tea break.
Yeah.
They put a little sugar in there, they get more work done out of that, right?
Yeah,
temporary.
Yeah.
But they only need it temporary.
Yeah.
Only gotta get you till 5 o'clock or whatever.
Go home and take your nap.
Yeah, that's exactly. We just care what you're doing while you're here and you're productive. But so there's the availability of it, but that's dependent upon what?
The demand.
The demand. Demand's always been there, I would say, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Crusaders like, wow, I want sugar.
What is it?
It's cost.
Oh, it's cheap.
It's cheap.
Oh, of course.
Right? It's economics. So when it's cheap, what happens?
You can make a lot of it for a little, and then you can sell it for a lot and make a lot.
And you know, we actually subsidize sugar growers in the United States. So sugar beet farmers and anybody that's growing cane sugar, and not a lot of cane sugar is being grown in the United States.
Right. It's a tropical thing.
It's a tropical. They could grow it in Hawaii. They don't. I think they're doing some in the Everglades, though. They've been gutting that. In Louisiana, there's some areas that they would have sugar, that sugar production, right? But so they're actually, they get a kickback. So instead of, I don't know what it is, but there's a certain amount, maybe 3 cents a pound or something. So we're paying more for the sugar than we should be because we're subsidizing those farmers, farmers in the United States. The problem is it's dirt cheap to begin with. So
right.
If you're paying, you know, 36, you're paying 39 cents a pound instead of 35 cents a pound. Like, what's the big deal?
It's negligible.
It's negligible, but it's a kickback to the sugar industry. Right? Yeah. So they get a kickback. So there's motivation for them to, you know, become sugar farmers, right? And again, we want to produce our own food. But regardless, so this sugar thing is, we've had to meet the demand. As soon as the demand is there and we get the taste of sugar, we want it.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we deliver it? And, you know, back in the Civil War times, it was expensive.
Right.
You'd pay a lot of money. I mean, I don't know what the translation was, but let's say it's, you know, $10 a pound.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it's whatever that cost is. That you'd be, well, what happens when food is really expensive? You're going to ration it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to celebrate every meal, right?
Right.
You're going to celebrate once in a
special.
While because it's very expensive in comparison to everything else. Now it's dirt cheap.
Right.
So what does the food industry do? They put it in everything.
Well, yeah. I mean, even bread.
I can't even believe
how many bread loaves have sugar as the ingredient.
But are they putting sugar in bread for a taste issue, or is it for a rising issue? I think it's because they're getting the yeast to activate more, perhaps, right? But
yeah,
it's not like you eat bread and you say it's sweet.
It's sweet, but it is sweet. It is, actually.
Maybe if you let
sweet.
It dissolve, yes,
yeah.
on your tongue, and you can get that glucose that, I mean, I remember doing that experiment in, I don't know, middle school, where you take a piece of white bread and you let it dissolve on your tongue and then it tastes sweet.
Yeah, and certainly versus the rye, you know, German bread that you were talking about earlier. It's way sweeter than that.
Oh, yeah, way sweeter. So, again, it's relative, but it's still not, let's say, sugar.
Right.
But they put it in everything. And understand sugar's a preservative as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We could preserve things. What was it that's pound for pound that if you're making jelly or jam or something, you use a pound of sugar for a pound of fruit?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, if that pound of fruit's going to cost you $50, you'd be like, whoa, maybe that's not the best way to preserve it. But when it becomes cheap, then we use it. And
right.
It is a preservative, right? And I understand that that's food chain stuff, or that's food, you know, that the food industry basically likes food that doesn't rot.
Mm-hmm.
food that has a long shelf life.
Shelf life, right.
Yeah, but so that's how we can preserve, right? Salt does that too, of course, right? Salt is a great preservative.
Yeah.
But so we can use it for that, but it's also, that's how you make your food, that's how you make your product stand out from somebody else's.
The longer shelf life?
Well, not the longer shelf life, but how much sugar do we put in it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the whole idea is sugar is really cheap. I'm going to be motivated in what's the best way that I can tempt your palate and have you keep coming back and buy my product versus buying somebody else's product.
I'm going to put more sugar in it.
Yeah, right. Or figure out what that right je ne sais quoi is on the sweetness, right? That bliss point that we talk about.
Right.
Right? Bliss point is the level at which you go, I would bet that your bliss point and my bliss point are relatively low compared to some others, but you know,
I have a high tolerance for sugar, though. More.
What's that mean? Tell me what you mean, high tolerance.
I can eat something that even though I don't always eat it, I could enjoy it. In other words, my daughter has a very, you know, like I think my daughter also would have the same kind of palate that we're talking about, where we don't eat a lot of it, so we don't need a lot of it. But I grew up with it, and so I feel like I can hearken back and eat something that she, for instance, would say, no, that's way too sweet. Do you know what I mean? I can go there. I can still go there.
So do you have
But
so why don't you go there? Is it a rationing thing? Is it? I mean, do you eat it and do you say, wow, this is really sweet? Because that's kind of where I'm at.
Right. I knew you did that because we've talked about this before, just you and I. But yes, I do not do that because of a rational understanding that I'm going to crash or that it's not good for me, you know. But certainly, it's just so, I can't even express to you how much sugar I ate as a kid. It's like unbelievable I have any teeth in my head.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I don't know. Did I have a lot of sugar? I mean, I never drank soda. I mean, I would buy candy if I had availability, but or I have allowance or something like that. But generally, I was like buying baseball cards, and
no.
I get that stick.
See, that's
of,
what I mean.
That
yeah,
stick
you get
of
the
you
stick
know
of gum.
That gum that was like rock hard, right? And you'd have to like let it sit in your mouth for right. like 10 minutes just to
my
start
mom,
to dissolve.
My mom would buy a package of say Chips Ahoy, and my brother and I could share that one for the week, and then she would buy one separately for our dad. That's how much sugar that we were allowed to have. And so that Chips Ahoy that my brother and I had, we would have half of that, but every week. And then we also had ice cream in the fridge, and then I'm also freezer. And then I'm also buying candy with my allowance. I mean, we had like Little Debbie treats every day in our lunch.
How do they make Little Debbies? How come they're so cheap? Right? You see that? I mean,
yeah.
Cosmic
it's
brownies
really,
or whatever.
Really poor quality ingredients. The oil, right? I'm sure.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, well, that's interesting. So you get the point where it's like too sweet for you?
No.
You don't get that.
No,
so,
but I don't do it. Do you
yeah,
know what
you
I'm saying?
You don't do like, it because you know where that goes.
Yeah, and I don't, I like the way I feel now. I was also very emotional as a teenager. We all are. But when I read my journals, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the sugar roller coaster. And I felt, you know, distant. And I, like I said, I know that technically that's where teenagers are anyway, but I know that a lot of it was fed by the roller coaster that I was going through due to the food that I was eating. I know that because I don't, you know.
So when you eat a sugar snap pea or a carrot, do you taste the sweetness?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I do.
So there's still a sense that that palate is refined.
Yes.
But you can kind of go back? Is it just sort of this
everyone's
nostalgic
like,
thing?
Yeah, like, yes, exactly. If somebody hands me something and I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't had one of those. Although I did go to Walmart last week and my brother got Peeps. He was visiting for the weekend.
Ugh.
And he got Peeps. And I did not even, that wasn't even on the register. But he ate the whole package.
Oh, God. The only thing they're good for is the microwave.
Oh, God. Where they dissolve back into sugar,
no,
essentially.
They puff up and explode. That's interesting. Well, I think back and maybe it was Fig Newtons for me.
Mm-hmm.
So you remember Fig Newtons?
Oh, yeah.
They come in a pack, and I remember they come in, you know, two of those packs.
Yep.
And I remember, I mean, my dad loved them, and it would be like I could pound a whole, sleeve of Fig Newtons. So yeah, maybe that would come back. But for me now, it'd be like I got to put butter on it. That's the thing.
Oh,
like butter gets put on everything that's sweet. If we
to
eat a cookie,
it's
almost like there's the butter. And it's funny. So my middle son. This is recently got married, and he was at his fiance's house or whatever for some Christmas or something, and they served brownies.
Uh-huh.
And he asked, where's the butter?
Where's
the
oh
butter?
My gosh.
And they're like, what? I think he was shamed from that. He's like, what? You put butter on brownies. So.
Oh, my gosh.
I guess I've trained my boys have learned that, at least, that they put butter on everything. And whether that makes it better, I'm not sure, but it's certainly, it's just a carrier for butter.
Oh, that's funny.
That's how I think of things. I don't know, but yeah, I mean, it's that bliss point. How do we lower that bliss point?
Mm-hmm. So, quick energy, that's what sugar is.
Yeah, so it's the energy piece. So let's maybe spend a moment on biochemistry. And I think we've had this conversation before, right? So to be really clear about what is sugar, because sugar is a word that we say and we're not being really precise.
Mm-hmm.
So chemists would like more precision in what we mean. If we said sugar, they'd say, well, what do you mean? Do you mean fructose? Do you mean sucrose? Do you mean glucose? Right, think of it. So we say blood sugar, right? My blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And blood sugar, when we say that, we're meaning blood glucose. Right, we don't mean sugar as in the plain white stuff, but understand that we use that term sugar that we get kind of confused. Well, not that we get confused, it's just that we're not being precise with our language. So to be clear here, when we talk about sugar, the plain white stuff, meaning that it's driven from sugar cane or sugar beets, and for the most part, what's interesting is you can't tell the difference whether it's CNH or whether it's crystal.
Hmm.
Crystal sugar comes from sugar beets. CNH is from sugar cane. That is so processed that you can't tell the difference.
And do they have the same...
They have the same chemical structure.
Wow.
Right? So the chemical structure, sucrose, that's what it is, right? It's sucrose. Sucrose is a disaccharide. It means it's two carbohydrate molecules linked together. And the two molecules are, it's a molecule of glucose and it's a molecule of fructose. So those bound together, two double sugar molecule, or, you know, disaccharide, and that's what it's made of, every single one. Sucrose, when we say sucrose, that's the chemical formula that we mean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, understand that if we get sweet potato or we eat honey or maple syrup, there's going to be a fair amount of sucrose in there, but there's going to be other things in there as well, right? So it still may be very sweet, but that sweetness, that is that sucrose component, right? Mm-hmm. So when we say sugar, we're talking about a disaccharide sucrose. So the other aspect, so there's another double sugar molecule that's pretty important, is lactose. Right? So lactose, again, same kind of deal. It's a double sugar molecule, but in this case, it's a molecule of glucose and a molecule of galactose. So galactose is different than fructose, right? So both those have in common that they have one molecule of glucose, but then there's either fructose or there's galactose.
Hmm.
And galactose is what milk sugar is.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, people have lactose intolerance, meaning they don't break down that disaccharide, meaning they consume dairy products and that disaccharide does not get divided, right? You're missing the enzyme lactase or you don't make enough of it. So then it creates digestive distress because you can't digest it properly,
mm.
right? And I think humans, we've kind of adapted to that, right? I don't know that we were, quote unquote, born with that or that was there in the... You know, when you talk about blood types and that kind of thing, that's been kind of an evolution of time, that we're able to raise animals and that we're, you know, we can live on the ruminants, right? So
mm-hmm.
So that's something we've sort of adapted to, and some humans have adapted better than others, yes? So some are lactose intolerant, and that's just a whole spectrum. But anyways, not sweet, right? Lactose isn't really sweet, whereas sucrose is sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes all the difference. Is it a galactose or is it a fructose molecule? So those are disaccharides. Then the monosaccharides are those individual ones, right? So that's glucose, that's fructose, that's galactose, right? And if we look at those, glucose is not very sweet. It's kind of syrupy. If you just do glucose on its own, crystalline glucose, it's not as sweet as table sugar or sucrose is. Fructose is, again, the name comes from fruit sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So it means it's fruit sugar is so really sweet, right? So that's what we get from fruit. So that's where the name comes from. And then galactose, being what's in milk sugar, is not sweet at all. So when we talk about blood sugar, right, or blood glucose, we're only talking about the glucose molecule, right? We're not talking about fructose. So fructose is what changes everything because it adds the sweetness to it.
Okay.
Right? So when we eat bread and potatoes and that kind of thing, that's all basically glucose. It's starch.
Yeah.
So there's very little fructose in there. Yeah, you can tell the difference. You taste it right away, right? Versus fruit, you're going to get some fructose in it, but understand how ripe was the fruit. And you don't even know how much sugar you're going to get or how much fructose you're going to get when you eat fruit till you taste it. Because you look at a blueberry, right? I mean, you could do that now. A blueberry. I'm not going to buy a blueberry.
Right.
Now. They come from Chile. But I look at that. I'm like, that's going to be really bitter. I know this, right? It's not going to be sweet.
Yeah.
And even if I buy them in June, they're still not sweet yet, right? So there's that aspect of getting that perfect piece of fruit kind of thing. Changes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for listening to listener-supported WDRT 91.9. I wanted to let you know that Paul Rattay is on his 16th in a series of lectures, and on Saturday, April 13th, he will be speaking about the clean label, or how the food industry continues to hide ingredients. Feel free to attend at the Commons on Jefferson Street here in Viroqua from 9 to 10 a.m. on Saturday, April 13th. It's a free will donation, but be sure to bring your questions.
Great, thank you. Clean label, how do we hide sugar?
Right.
That's next month.
Right.
Too much biochem here?
Well, that was interesting.
All right,
now
so
we know.
But it's the fruit part, right? And the thing is that they have different metabolic effects in our body. I think that's what's important. And we just use that word sugar to incorporate everything, whereas we want to be a little bit more clear, like, do we mean glucose? Do we mean fructose? Do we mean sucrose? Do we mean, do we mean lactose? Because you look at a yogurt container, plain yogurt, and you look at the sugar content in plain yogurt, you'd be like, wow, there's sugar in here. It doesn't taste sweet. They didn't add anything. Where'd the sugar come from? Because it's milk sugar. It's lactose. And it doesn't, I mean, it counts, right? But it's glucose and galactose. There's no fructose there.
Yeah. So that's why you don't get a high, so to speak. You don't get a kick from yogurt.
Yeah, you don't really get a kick from yogurt, right? Well, you put sugar in it.
Right, right. You put honey or fruit in it.
Yeah, that changes things.
Yeah. But the yogurt itself.
Yeah. So fructose is the monosaccharide that we want to pay some attention to, because that's the one that's got the health effects. Or those are the how we are going to metabolize that, right? So remember, glucose, every cell in the body uses glucose. Glucose is like energy du jour, right? Every cell uses it. Your brain loves it. Your liver, your kidneys, your heart. You give me glucose, every cell is going to use that. It's like energy source.
Right. And I was thinking about what you were talking about before, like, why do we have more sugar? It's not just that the sugar is being marketed to us, but we also tend to live more sedentary lifestyle. And so maybe part of our addiction to sugar, modern addiction to sugar, is that kick to keep us going. I mean, right? The pace of life.
Right, for sure. So that's the energy piece.
Yeah.
Right. So the energy, so understand, glucose is like fantastic energy.
Right.
Fantastic. The issue with that is, how is it delivered into the body, right? Do we have to work on getting the glucose out of a food, or is the glucose just going to be presented to us, right? That's a kind of the whole potatoes and, all those starches that we eat.
Yeah.
Fructose does the same sort of thing, but it's a little bit different. Fructose isn't a really good energy source, so this seems kind of odd, because we talk about sugar, right, the evils of sugar, and that it's, I talk about it, it amplifies the ego and it gives you quick energy. But really, the energy is coming from the glucose component to it, right? So we go back to sucrose, right? So it's glucose and fructose.
Yeah.
So the glucose gives you the quick energy. And again, it's in a refined form, so you're going to get that glucose even quicker. But understand, half of it is fructose. And that fructose is a completely different molecule in the body. And it's funny, it's an isomer of glucose. Isomer means it has the same exact chemical formula. They just flip one of the methyl group on one is, or the OH group, hydroxyl group is on one side versus the other. That's the only difference between glucose and fructose. But it changes everything and how we metabolize it. Because fructose is only metabolized in the liver. So in other words, your cells can't use that immediately for energy.
Okay.
Your brain can't use fructose. And we never talk about, what's your blood fructose?
Yeah.
Because fructose is really damaging in your bloodstream. And so your body, your liver, is basically going to suck out all the fructose before it hits the general circulation. And the liver is going to convert that fructose into something else. So I want to be clear that that's not a bad guy, right? Fructose is actually beneficial, because the liver can turn that into glycogen, Right. So glycogen is the energy storage is stored in the liver. Like that's what gives us the, you know, it's a human starch kind of thing. It's mm-hmm. glycogen. So we could take that fructose and turn it into there and store it in our liver. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it also, if that's kind of overwhelmed or there's too much, right, this is a whole moderation thing. There comes a point that then the liver can also turn fructose into fat. Mm. So it converts it into fat. Because fructose is damaging in the body, so the body, the liver has to do something with it.
Yeah, transform right? it.
And some people will talk about, you know, fructose is, you know, alcohol without the buzz, right? So alcohol is kind of similar to fructose because it's only metabolized in the liver.
Mm.
So it's a burden on the liver, right? Alcohol. And we kind of know what alcohol does. You get fatty liver disease, you get all these things, you know, all the health detriments for alcohol. But fructose isn't very far behind because it maintains or kind of it burdens the liver similar to alcohol.
Hmm.
Not as quickly, but it burdens it. But there's some benefit from it. Like I said, you make glycogen from it and, you know, your liver can do good things with it. But then it does bad things with it. The problem is, when does that occur? And I think that eating 25 pounds of sugar a year is a lot different than eating 150 pounds of sugar a year.
Right.
Does it make sense that you're burdening the liver a lot more? And then how resilient is your liver? How resilient are you to be able to continue to eat something or consume something and not have it start to trash your metabolism?
Right. I was going to ask you how you think fruitarians survive, but then I remembered that most people that I know who were fruitarians, I lived in Arizona for 7 years and I knew several of them, but they didn't maintain it. So they would have, you know, I guess a few years where it seemed like they were cleansing their system. But they, you know, I know them today and they're not fruitarians anymore.
But they had to get fruit when it dropped from the tree, wasn't it? I mean, I remember meeting a fruitarian mm-hmm. that was like, it needs to be like not sitting at all. It's just like you get it ripe right off the tree.
I don't know if these guys were so pure in their way.
Yeah, so, but is fruit a bad guy, right? So fruit has a fair amount of fructose, but remember, how sweet is that fruit?
Depends.
I mean, if it's not that sweet, I mean, you eat and think about it, eating a banana is different than eating a strawberry.
Yeah.
Strawberries, I mean, we think about the sweetness of a strawberry, but that's a really ripe strawberry, and I'm not sure that it's completely sweet, not compared to a grape or compared to a banana. And that's different levels of fructose. But also understand we're getting different tastes, right? A banana and the texture is completely different than the plain white stuff that they use as a filler in everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And when you eat a banana or you eat an apple or you eat, and you can get a fair amount of fructose, and it can be a problem in, let's say, in diabetics who are very fragile. But other people, I don't worry so much about eating a piece of fruit,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't think that you need to go that far. But it's just the level that you're going to taste that and you're going to have to manage it and you're going to deal with all the other constituents that are in there. Even, like I said, with honey and maple syrup, in molasses on some level, right? Those are more of a food, right? They're more live food. It's not so refined.
Yeah.
Right? And the refining is the death, right? So that plain white stuff, the sucrose, the powdered sucrose, that's dead food, right? It's crystalline. It's not quote unquote supporting life per se. If we're saying supporting life means that you're getting some life forces from it, right? You're nourishing yourself. But you're getting energy from that, right? You get that burst of energy and you get that burst of, like, sort of what I call amplifying the ego. It makes you stronger.
Yeah, right?
In the moment, but it doesn't last.
Yeah.
Right? And is it because it's a dead food? Is it because, you know, what component of that? And remember, like I said, the fructose isn't really a good energy source. It's the glucose that's the energy source, but it's the fructose that has sort of this background effect on the liver and stimulates kind of things to happen, kind of like alcohol, but not the same, right? It doesn't have the same effect. But I don't know that eating bread, eating a potato, has the same effect as eating, you know, sucrose. And eating bread actually gives you more energy because it's all glucose.
Because it's sustained, right?
Well, yeah, but then what if it's refined? What if it's what if it's white bread? How quickly does your body utilize that? But understand, it's still different because it doesn't have to really be processed by the liver.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the fructose has to go to the liver, so it's you know, your metabolism is now getting engaged, and perhaps that's the effect that it has, this sort of amplifying effect. Right. Mm-hmm. Or it's sort of gives you this false sense of strength or this illusionary, you know, energy and power and whatever. Right.
Right. Which is what we need when we're working, you know, 8 hours a day at a dead end job. Right?
Yeah. We need the burst.
Yeah.
We need the burst.
I noticed that one of the reasons why it was easier to let go of sugar was when I had a more fulfilling life. That's what I noticed that changed for me was that I was no longer looking to just get through my day and get a kick so that I could be, you know, productive, but that I was feeling more fulfilled.
Yeah, and see, this is the thing is that sugar is a food, right? It's considered a food. I mean, alcohol, we know it's a drug. Mm-hmm. Caffeine, we know it's a drug. Right? It has those effects, and it's not really, well, alcohol does give you some energy, but that energy is all sort of in the back door. Because it's all based on what your liver processing that and then turning that alcohol into a form that you can use for energy. Whereas sugar is already, like I said, half of it, right? Sucrose in here. Half of it's that energy, and then half of it is that what the liver is going to do with that.
Yeah.
And is it just the sweet taste? Is it that desire? Is it, you know, is there something going on there? But, you know, the whole idea is how do we temper that? And I don't think that the solution is to say never eat sugar, right? As much as it's like, oh, go on a ketogenic diet. And I like the idea that you could go on a ketogenic diet short term and kind of clear the palate on there. But you could do the same thing by just saying, hey, I'm just going to go on a sugar detox.
Mm-hmm.
A sugar detox means, okay, I don't eat anything sweet for 2 weeks.
Right. And but I guess my point from a philosophical standpoint is what are you doing? You know, I mean, to take something out is one thing, but it can often feel painful if it's a habit or if it's helping you cope with something else that needs to be fixed as well. I personally wouldn't tell anyone to not eat sugar. I would say, why are you dissatisfied with your life? Like, what if they're eating sugar on a regular basis? That's what I mean. To me, there's a philosophical aspect to it, a spiritual aspect to it. For at least there was for me. That was my experience. Yeah. I know that as soon as I started working in a job that made more sense to me and I had a slightly slower pace of life and I didn't feel like I was using it as this, like I said, as this kick, as this drug to like get me through. And that's why now I may have like 10 chocolate chips just to do the dishes before bed. But that's sort of a hearkening back. I mean, we work too much, right? I know people who hit the 4 o'clock wall every day at work. And then they want that candy bar or that sugar supplement to get them through. And I'm saying, is there something in your life that you can do to aid in the pulling back of the sugar as well? Because it's not just the sugar, right?
I mean, it's not the right? sugar.
It's the whole environment around us.
Yeah, it's conducive to that, right? It feeds us, right? It feeds us on a level that's not really good nourishment, yes. It's feeding a cycle. It's feeding that we're trying to get stuff done, that we're in a fast-paced environment.
Yes.
So that's a good question is, like, where do you start on that? Do you start by saying, oh, I'll take the sugar out, or do you replace it, right? Is it a replacement game that you replace it with something else? Think of that with Alcoholics Anonymous. What happens when you go to an AA meeting?
You go and you eat donuts and coffee.
Oh my gosh, yes. Right? And I would say that the donut is far less damaging than the alcohol.
Less damaging?
Less damaging?
Yeah.
So this is the idea that, okay, well, you're replacing a bad vice with a maybe not so bad vice.
Right.
But still, again, it hasn't got to the you know, it hasn't solved the problem.
Right.
But because do you just go cold turkey off, or do you try to work with that aspect, or do you just say, hey, I'm going to cut it in half? Right.
Yeah.
So how do we effectively ration that?
Yeah.
Because we would ration it if it were expensive.
Right. Right.
The problem is it's so dirt cheap that it's in everything.
Yeah.
We cannot avoid it. And we'd have the conversation about fat too, right? I know we've talked about ice cream, yeah. So ice cream, that perfect emulsification of cream and sugar.
Right.
But cream is expensive. Sugar is cheap. So the food industry that wants to make a profit, they're going to do whatever they can to keep the cream out of it or as least as possible. But they'll put as much sugar as they need to because they can make up for it. And it'll be just like, oh, you will tantalize your taste with sweet rather than the mouthfeel that you get from fat.
Right.
But that's, you know,
you should just put butter on it.
Oh, my God, put butter on ice cream. I've never put butter on ice cream. That's a great idea. But,
it's
you know, but I can't
Paul.
Eat butter by itself, though. Can
no.
you eat butter by itself? I can't.
Okay, so when Annalena was very strict macrobiotic with me,
yes.
One time she came home from a play date and she told me that she ate A stick of butter.
Oh, she ate a stick of butter. Oh my
and
gosh.
I was horrified, not because I was against butter. I mean, we didn't eat it. We didn't eat it in our house. She never had it before that, you know. But I was more horrified that somehow there was such a deficiency that she was able to handle eating an entire stick of butter.
Wow. So, again, butter is it's a food per se, right? But it's fat.
Yeah.
But it's a delivery of energy in a different way. Yes.
Yeah.
Much, much more blunted. Yes. It's not glucose. It's not sugar. And do we just do that to kind of blunt it?
Yeah.
Is that the blunting of the Fig Newton for me that I put butter on it?
Mm.
I don't know, but I mean, is it a mouthfeel thing? It's partly mouthfeel, but it's also just that, I don't know. But how do you deal with cutting your sugar intake, right? I mean, I would say that the key to a healthy diet is to ration your sugar intake.
Yeah.
And what does ration mean? And how far do we go to ration? And what does that look like?
Right.
Right. And understand that we're really poor rationers in this culture, but we're really good rationalizers.
Right. We don't have to ration. That's why we're poor rationizers.
Right? It's like my son, so my oldest, he'll be like, you know, he goes in front of a soda machine and I'd say, you know, what's he going to do 100% of the time? You know, choose a soda over water. And I asked him about this and he says, Dad, that's not true. That's only 80% of the time. But I'm like, why would you choose soda? Why would you drink, if you're thirsty, drink water? You've heard that from me for, you know, 26 years. I've, you know, put that into you how bad soda is. But he says, but Dad, I don't drink as much as my friends do.
Right. There's
I'm
the
like,
rationalization.
Oh, I gotcha. So how much soda is acceptable?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, right? And again, he just has to, you know, figure that out for himself. But that's the idea. How do you ration that? And again, soda's available everywhere.
Right.
And so how do you effectively say, I'm going to cut my sugar intake? And you could do just a replacement and say, well, I'm just going to use honey instead of the plain white stuff. But that means that, okay, well, that plain white stuff, the sucrose can't be in any of the other products that I use, right? So if there's sugar there, I have to add it. So buy yogurt that's plain. And if you need to add honey to it or you need to add fruit to it, so be it.
Right.
Because then you'll add it to the point that you're like, hey, that works for my palate instead of getting it already pre-sweetened.
Yeah, and it won't be anything like honey or fruit if you're buying sugary yogurt.
Of course, of course. You never be able to go back to that.
Right.
Yes. So what are those, how do we engage with things?
Mm-hmm.
What are our rules to say, I'm going to spend my sugar here? Right? And it's like I go to a party and they have a cake from Walmart or wherever, right? I mean, I'm not going to eat that. it puts a film in your mouth,
on
your teeth, and it's disgusting. I mean, I told you the Skittle story, didn't I,
yes,
with my boys? I mean, how can you eat those?
Yeah, but again,
did you
remember,
eat Skittles?
Of course.
You I liked them?
Every candy under the sun.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I remember eating that candy, but I never had a Skittle. I'm older than you, I guess.
Skittles have been around a while. But
I mean, I had Tangy Taffy somewhat.
When you eat sugar, though, you fly out of yourself.
Oh, my gosh, that's
right?
True.
And so then, again, I feel like you have to ask yourself, why am I eating sugar? And especially if there's a habit formed, why am I doing this, right? I mean, if you've got a really stressful job and you eat a really healthy dinner, you say to yourself, not only do I have a stressful job, but I've also eaten a healthy dinner, and now I deserve a bowl of ice cream. And then you have to also ask yourself, what is that bowl of ice cream helping me do? Forget my day. And so then you have to ask yourself, are you in the right line of work? If you feel like you need a bowl of ice cream to fly out of yourself, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
I totally hear.
Yeah. So it's more than just how much sugar am I eating and, you know, and how do I cut it back? It's when am I eating it and why am I eating it? What's my relationship to it? How do I feel? And how do I change my feeling life? You know, can I do it some other way? Because like I said, that was one of the huge impacts in my life. I had changed my job and I said, wow, I don't even want that, you know, half a sleeve of cookies when I get home from work. I love my job. I love my life. What's going on here? Wow.
Yeah, you treat the cause.
Yes.
Right, you're treating the cause. But do you treat the symptom or do we ignore the symptom or do we replace one symptom with another symptom, right? So that's like, well, I don't drink alcohol. I just eat sugar.
Right. Right. But then you can say, well, and I understand that sugar is akin to alcohol in its effect. And so that's going to be my stepping stone. And then it's going to be, I'm going to have honeyed tea every night, you know, to get myself over the hump of wanting something sweet. And then I'm going to, you know, cut back to fruit whenever I feel like it.
Yeah. And here's my take too, that I think there's a difference in when you eat the sugar during the day.
Oh, for sure.
So even if we're just looking at it from a liver function thing, right, which I tend to overfocus on, that liver is not so active during the day. It's much more active at night when we sleep. So even eating sugar at night, your body's able to tolerate that better. Your liver's has a higher tolerance to the sugar at night than it does during the day.
And now my daughter can't listen to this
radio
show.
Oh my gosh.
Because I'm always saying, if you want something sweet, have it after breakfast, have it after lunch, don't have it after dinner, because it gives you that, you know, second wind, and then you're not going to sleep as well, is what I thought.
I think that you put honey in tea, like you've talked about, that can calm things down and help you sleep.
Yeah,
it's going to have
different.
A different effect, right? There's
that's
not
different.
So much of the energy that you're going to get, right? That illusionary strength and quick energy that you get from sugar at night isn't quite the same. I think that your liver is just able to tolerate it more. So that's just like, I mean, I talk about that kind of with carb cycling as well. So eating carbohydrates early in the day, specifically sugar, is going to be more damaging than if you eat it later on in the day. And again, so then you're like, I've had a hard day. I need to come down and I deserve this. I'm going to do this. But then, you know, it's a bowl of ice cream. But what's a bowl of ice cream? Or, you know, I would say I'd eat cereal. Yes. I mean, that's for me. Like, I usually eat cereal in the morning. I would eat cereal at night. But now it's not like I necessarily eat sweet cereal, but I could eat Cookie Crisp. Are you kidding me?
Oh my God.
I mean, this kind of thing. But, you know, it's granola now. I make granola and I put honey in it, but I use whatever I need to kind of feel like, okay, it's got some sweetness to it. But I eat, you know, the Ezekiel cereal, which is like, you know, not sweet
grape
at
nuts.
All. Like grape nuts, but grape nuts on steroids kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a crunch thing, right? So for me, it's as much as a crunch thing rather than so much a sweet thing. And I don't mind the sweet thing, but I mean, that's me. But so the idea is, do we just cut the sugar out? Do we just say, I mean, if you want to lower your bliss point, if you don't eat anything sweet for 2 weeks, your bliss point comes down.
Right.
Because
right.
then you could taste the carrot. You could taste these things. And you're more amenable to that. But does that mean I'm going to continue this forever? Or again, what are my rules of engagement? Like, how do I keep that down? How do I, like, ration it?
Thank you so much for tuning in to listener-supported WDRT 91.9. Please join Paul Rattay at the Commons on Jefferson Street here in Viroqua for the 16th in his lecture series. This one will be on Saturday, April 13th from 9 to 10 a.m. And the topic is Clean Label, How the Food Industry Continues to Hide Ingredients. Saturday, April 13th from 9 to 10, free will donation, and bring your questions.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So where were we? How do we get the sugar down?
How do we get the sugar down?
How do we make it not so much a driving force for us? And can we just replace it with starch?
From an energy level.
It doesn't amplify it though, right? There's something about sugar that just lifts us that we don't necessarily get from eating a potato.
Yes, but
is that right? I mean,
yeah, it's totally true. But can we get it from even running around the block or getting on an exercise bike for 10 minutes and raising our heart rate? Would that do something?
But that's not giving you energy. That's using energy.
Right, but I feel like it does give me energy to do something like that. 10 jumping jacks?
So, but is that then an adrenal response to say, nah, I'm externalizing the stress response? So my body's telling me to run or fight, so I go run and fight, and I'm actually calmed down my nervous system, but I haven't necessarily taken more energy in.
Right.
I mean, this is a whole deal. Like, are you going to burn fat because you get on a treadmill?
Right.
I mean, this is the idea that we have, though. You want to lose weight, you exercise. I mean, exercise gets you to be able to tolerate carbohydrates much better, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Mm-hmm.
But whether it actually causes weight loss is another issue. Cause, meaning I do this and this is what happens. I mean, I think it's beneficial. So, again, but that means that there's some energy there. I mean, if you're in a hypoglycemic, right, that's a blood sugar roller coaster that we talk about. And understand, you know, that's the blood glucose roller coaster, not necessarily the blood sucrose roller coaster, right? And it's the glucose component that plays a role on our blood sugar, right, our blood glucose. Fructose really has no effect on that short term. which is interesting because if you look at the glycemic index of foods.
Yeah, right.
The glycemic index of foods, the sweet fruits have a relatively low glycemic index.
I know, it's a Honeycrisp apple
is got a lower glycemic index than does potatoes, mashed potatoes. Because it's the blood glucose is based on how much glucose is in the food.
Not sucrose. Or fruit,
not fructose, right? And a Honeycrisp apple has a fair amount of fructose.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we kind of run astray because we say, or you know, people will say, oh, well, you know, agave nectar is a low glycemic index sweetener. So if I'm a diabetic, I can use agave nectar because it doesn't spike my blood glucose, which is true.
Right.
It doesn't. But it's all fructose. And where's that fructose going?
To the liver.
To the liver. And your liver probably has an issue to begin with. That's why you're diabetic, because you're not managing your blood glucose well. So why aren't you managing your blood glucose well? Because you've been managing your blood glucose for 40, 50, 60 years. I mean, we always do that. We're prime directive of humans. But we lose that ability. Did that just happen overnight? What else are we doing that sets us up that now I can't tolerate the glucose? See, I think fructose is a major component there, right?
Because it's weakening the liver.
Because it's weakening the liver, and now you're getting breakthrough that now you can't manage the blood glucose. I think alcohol does that too, right? Don't get me wrong. I mean, alcohol is even worse. But that's just the idea that, you know, what's the cause of the issue? So a diabetic, I'd be like, well, don't eat a carbohydrate. Why would you eat a carbohydrate? You're carbohydrate intolerant. But they haven't been on carbohydrate intolerant their whole life.
Right. Right.
So what was the process there and where do we start? And again, like you said, do we just take the sugar out? Do we just take the carbohydrates out? We see balance from that, right? We'll see effects from it. But what's the long-term end game?
What's sustainable?
Yeah, what's sustainable? And do I have to never eat a carbohydrate again? That's hard to do.
Yes.
Really hard to do. And do I never eat sugar again? But somehow you got to be like, okay, I got to figure out the rules of engagement. And understand, we're all different, right? We have the same metabolism. We have the same liver that does the same thing, but it doesn't work the same in everybody.
Right, the N of one.
Yeah, that, you know, some people tolerate alcohol better than other people, right? And people that tolerate alcohol, they detoxify it more effectively, make better alcoholics.
Right.
Because they don't get sick on it.
Yeah.
I get sick on alcohol. I tried to be an alcoholic when I went to college. It doesn't work, right? I get sick. I get sick for like a day and a half. It's not like, oh, I'm hungover and then I'm good to go. I'm like, I can't function. Like I learned quickly, like that's not going to work for me. But, you know, again, what are those rules of engagement? How do you manage it and how do you count that? Right? How do you take responsibility and say, hey, I'm trying to ration my sugar intake? And again, maybe it's just after your evening meal, but then not during, you know, breakfast or lunch, or you're saying I'm deliberate about not even snacking in between meals.
Oh, wow. That might be harder than giving up sugar.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But maybe if you snack, you just snack on something that's got glucose in it. But that's the whole grazing piece, right? So people that have, you know, I call it reactive hypoglycemia, but the blood sugar roller coaster, they basically just will eat every 2 hours and they keep their blood sugar from crashing, their blood glucose from crashing by doing that, by constantly eating. Question is, are they eating sugar to do that or are they eating a potato, right? I think there's a big difference depending on what you're going to use for that energy.
Hmm.
And grazing, you know, grazing is a fine way to manage that, but I don't think that's, the long-term option. The goal would be, like, how do I change what I eat so I don't need to graze?
Yeah.
Or how do I change my environment so that I don't need the sugar?
Yes.
I mean, I totally agree with you. That's kind of harder when, you know, where do we start on that? Oh, you got to quit your job, and then your sugar content or, you know, your sugar intake will go down. And I totally agree with that, but it's the aspect of, okay.
Is that
the first step, or, you know, is it just to say, hey, I probably don't need as much of this as I am getting, and how do I figure out a rationing plan?
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of hold it to be like my goal is 25 pounds a year. Right, to try to go back, like I'm in Civil War time, and that's how much sugar that I want to eat. Do I count it? No. And what do I count? So me personally, I don't count a piece of fruit. So to me, fruit does not count on my sugar content.
Hmm.
I count honey. I count maple syrup. So I count those. I mean, I would count fruit juice. I would count, of course, the other sugar that's in there. Right, or just
the sucrose.
But you
don't drink fruit juice for the most part.
I don't drink fruit juice. Sometimes I get the purple grape juice. I like that purple grape juice, but I use, you know,
an inch.
Yeah, an inch in a, you know, cup that's 7 inches, so 1 to 7 or something. But I just need a little bit of that, right? And it's there's that density of purple grape juice, right? There's something about
it.
Yeah,
and
I
so
can
true.
Get, totally get it with, you know, watering that down with, you know, Gerold Steiner water, right?
Yeah.
Sparkling water.
Yeah,
but again, it's still that sweetness, right? I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think we should be Luddites and say, well, I never eat sugar.
No, I mean, people have researched indigenous cultures, and when they find honey, they gorge on it because they don't always find it, right? And then they go on, and they don't have honey again for months until they might find another hive. And you know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
This is as old as time.
Yeah, that's the Hadza. So this is interesting. Right. I don't know if you know, Paul Saladino is the big carnivore
guy. Yeah, that's
where
I got that from.
Oh, yeah. He goes
his pills for a little bit after I transitioned from macrobiotics.
And he's like flipped gears, right? So he's like, oh, I'm not carnivore anymore.
Oh,
I'm gonna.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, he's totally flipped the gear because he goes and lived with the Hadza for a while, and they eat honey.
Yeah.
And they'll eat a lot of honey, right? So 15% of their diet is honey.
When they find it. Right.
So, but they're not eating 15% of their diet as honey every day.
No.
They're eating 100% of their diet for 2 or 3 days when they find it, and then it's back down to zero.
Yeah.
I think that's different than eating 15% every day.
Oh, for sure it is.
And think about it. So fructose, like I said, is not necessarily a bad guy. It actually gets you to make fat, right? You store fat from it. It'll help you, you know, make glycogen. But let's say it's the end of the season and you're getting ready to hibernate, right? So the whole idea is you're now looking for ripe fruit. You're going to gorge on it. That's what's available. You're going to flood your body with fructose, and you're actually going to turn that into fat to be able to use during the winter months.
Right.
So this is just kind of the natural rhythm of things, because you wouldn't be eating, you know, blueberries in February in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Or strawberries. They're not available.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we lived in the tropics, well, strawberries still wouldn't be available, but we'd eat bananas or, you know, whatever we had, but completely different environment.
And that would be something where it would be available on the regular.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, right, exactly. So, but then you could go on the raw food diet, and what's it, 42 bananas a day? Who was the guy that was eating 42 bananas?
Oh, my gosh.
Woo. Some guy living somewhere, and he's like, all I do is eat bananas every day. I'm like, okay, well, again, what's available to you in your surroundings instead of what are we shipping from halfway across the planet to consume?
Yes.
Right. And what's that? Where's the balance that we find in this? And how do we know that we affect the balance? And that's kind of my point about saying, can we take sugar out so that you know what it's like not to have sugar, at least added sugar? And I'm going to say that includes the fake sugar too.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of fake sugar because it's still the sweet taste. I mean, stevia, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's still, you're getting that sweet taste. You may not get the hit that you get from sugar.
But you're still training
yourself.
But you're
training yourself on that palate instead of just training your palate to say, I just don't need that. It's just too sweet.
Yeah, and I would say that that's a good gauge of figuring out if you've got a good relationship with sugar is when you're able to see it and say no.
Yeah, correct.
Right? I mean, if you, you know, and honestly, when I am at that point, I always say no because I say to myself, wow, I've had many years of my early life where I couldn't say no. And the fact that I can say no right now in this moment, to me, it becomes philosophical in that moment. And I say, I'm just going to enjoy the fact that I feel strong and in my, you know, in my power to say no to this piece of cake.
Yeah,
and
that's
celebrate a different way.
That's the work that you're doing instead of the shortcut, right? So sugar will provide you that shortcut strength, right?
Yeah.
That amplification of the ego and this kind of thing to say, now I'm able to finish my day or I'm able to do this, versus it's that inner work that you're doing to say, hey, I know my relationship. I've been here. I've done this. This is what my physical activity, you know, all these things that go into this. To say, yeah, but I don't necessarily need that. I'm trying to build that strength from within.
Yes.
Right? And I think that's just the culture, and that's the food industry feeding that. That's the way we've, you know, been trained to do things, right? That we're like, you are your own person, and you have at any given moment in time can choose from anything in your kitchen to help you get through the next moment, to get through the next 5 minutes, to get through the next 30 minutes or what have you.
Right.
Instead
and yet
of
they,
working
And yet they don't
it.
Sell it that way in the commercials. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's interesting that that's the psychology behind it from a marketing perspective, but from the actual marketing, it's just flavor and community and love, right? Like, drink a Coke, share a Coke, we're all together, or Doritos, the new flavor. It's just interesting that what the marketing, you know, people want you to actually experience in your everyday life is that you can't make it on your own. Inner development is left behind, and it's all about get your next fix. And yet the commercials are telling you, this is how you become an individual, and this is how you connect with other people, and this is how you choose, you know, your flavor, or this is how you attain, you know, that flavor punch that you're looking for, that next, you know, that next level flavor, yeah. Right? Yeah. So it's interesting that
it's celebration. Perhaps it's also because we're at the point that we can't put more sugar in our food. Right? I mean, we can't eat 100% sugar. Well, I guess maybe you could try. But this is the idea that we're already at the max point of this, and they got to continue to have that product in front of us. So now we're selling lifestyle, right? We're selling other things that go along with it. So you'd enjoy Coke with a friend. Wow, I'm going to enjoy poison with my friends. Let's all like...
I'm a pepper too. Wow. I'm a pepper too. You know, which is such a funny one because to me, it's they're trying to say you're an independent person thinking for yourself, but then you're also a pepper too. You're not really an individual. You're like everybody else, but you chose that. So you're an individual. Awesome.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, marketing is really... I just watched something last night. The psychology of the grocery store. Why is the produce section the first thing you walk into? Because the psychology of it is once you fill your basket with the produce that you want, now you've told yourself psychologically, I'm healthy and I've made healthy choices. So by the time I make it over to the chip aisle, well, I deserve this. Look at all the healthy food I put in my cart earlier. Now I deserve these chips. And you'll make choices based on the fact that you now have pegged yourself as a healthy person because you put fruit and vegetables in first.
Ah, interesting. I didn't think about it that way. Yeah. I think about it, they're trying to entice you with that because that's fresh food, right? And when you think of the grocery store and it's the fresh food and you want to see that.
Nope.
They it gets you to buy more stuff
later. Because you've pegged yourself now as a good person.
Okay, so you know the solution to that.
Go to the opposite end? Yeah, go to the meat section?
Or you can only bring the basket you can carry.
Right. They said that too, that shopping carts are like 300 sizes larger than they were when they were first developed in the 40s or whatever. They're literally, and if you go to any Whole Foods, you know that. Those carts, you could fit 5 children in a shopping cart at Whole Foods.
It's or maybe incredible. You have 5 children, so the 5 children are in your cart and there's less room and
right?
they do other things.
Yeah, bring all your children, although you know how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
Mommy, can I have? Mommy, can I have? And they put the dairy in the back because studies have shown that a large percentage of people always are going to get something in that dairy cooler, right? Be it eggs, dairy, or cheese. And so they put it in the back because you have to walk through the other aisles to get to the back where the dairy is.
Oh, gosh.
It was a fascinating YouTube clip. It was just, you know, marketing trip after marketing trip. It was actually about Costco as well.
And they know it, right? And they've spent millions of dollars to
research,
determine this.
Research, absolutely. I mean, he showed all of the different research papers that had been put out. He quoted percentages and all of that. I mean, it's a whole business. It really is, right?
Yeah.
Feeding humanity is a business, and the bottom line is their bottom line. It's not about your health. So you really do. I mean, he was saying, the other thing he said, of course, we all know, feed yourself before you go shopping, but also you will get decision fatigue, and they know that too. And so get in and get out in under 25 minutes.
Yeah, that's the paradox of choice thing. That's another one that's coming up is that too many choices paralyze us.
Yeah.
Like, I just need 2 choices. That's it, because I can weigh pros and cons when I have 2 choices.
Mm-hmm.
When I have 20 choices, it's complete overwhelm.
Right.
Fatigue. Decision fatigue.
Unfortunately, we have to leave you, dear listener, but thank you so much for tuning in to listener-supported WDRT 91.9. Don't forget to show up Saturday, April 13th from 9 to 10 a.m. at the Commons on Jefferson Street here in Viroqua for the 16th in Paul Rattay's series, Clean Label, How the Food Industry Continues to Hide Ingredients. Until then.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Paul.